A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Today we've got a great malicious compliance story involving a dealership. We'll get into that in a bit, but first, deny the flexibility you promised? Fine, cover my shifts and still have to pay me. I was in a supervisory role as a charge nurse. I'd worked in this position for about 3 years. I had great reviews and earned consistent raises and performance bonuses. I approached my managers and requested that they agree to a flexible schedule if I worked on my master's degree. I wasn't asking for time off, I just wanted them to adjust my schedule when it came time for my practical rotations. They agreed as they wouldn't be losing any productivity and would be gaining a nurse practitioner for the system. About a year after I started the program, it became apparent I was going to need to divorce my wife. We'd been married for many years, it was quite a blow. I called the employee assistance program and got some therapy that was very helpful. My managers also suggested I apply for FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act, due to their concern for my mental health. I was very grateful. I had been working for this system for a number of years and had many, many hours of PTO, paid time off, saved up. But I figured the FMLA leave would be a smart thing to be approved for in case core times were scheduled when I was working. I was approved for up to 40 hours per week for a year. About a year into my master's program, it became necessary for me to step down from my role as a charge and take a staff nurse position. My main manager was livid. She took it very personally and stopped talking to me and greeting me. I was very hurt initially. As my practical rotations were about to start, I reminded my managers of their promise to be flexible with my schedule. They denied my request for flexibility and began to schedule me almost entirely for the times I would request off. At first, I was frustrated and very hurt that they did this, but I remembered that I was approved for FMLA leave. FMLA is a special form of leave and cannot be denied. As my managers were not keeping their promises, it was with great satisfaction I began to call off every morning I needed to for my rotations. I didn't give them any advance notice because I wasn't required to. It was with even greater satisfaction I learned my managers began to have to cover my shifts themselves on occasion. As I had PTO hours saved up, I still got paid as well. I finished all of my rotations in this manner and took a job at a different system after I graduated. I worked at the new system for a few years before I was hired back at my old system as a provider. I loved seeing the look on my old manager's face when I took my first shift at her hospital as a provider and not under her chain of command. Needless to say, stories like this are shining examples of why if you can apply and fit the need for stuff like FMLA, you should definitely do so because let's be real, most employers, they're not exactly going to stick their necks out for you. Alfred Register 7379 wrote, "Holy smokes, thank God you pulled through. Congratulations on completing your master's and becoming a provider. Take care of yourself first in every way." Also, hi, I'm Steven, and if you enjoy awesome stories of malicious compliance, why not hit those like and subscribe buttons down below? That said, our next story is Rewrite Your Prices to Gouge Money from Students and Bleed Money Out, a tutorial. This is from over a decade ago when I was a student, but it never fails to make me smile even now. The curriculum I was in is very particular to my country. It's a 2-year intensive program that usually ends in admission to the best schools in the country. This curriculum, like most of its kind, was hosted by a public high school with a much larger population of high school students and, important part, it was heavily STEM oriented. This high school, being downtown in a big city in a large area of nothing, had, in addition to the usual lunchroom, boarding facilities that were mostly used by students in this curriculum, as the high school population usually lived in town. When I arrived, the price structure was the following. Boarding students paid a fixed price of about 62 euros a week for the room and all meals Monday morning through Saturday morning. Other students could eat lunch for about 4 euros 30 cents a lunch with a prepaid card. Easy enough. I don't remember the exact prices, but it was in this range. In January of my second year, all boarding students were made to attend a meeting about a new price structure that would count everything separately. The room would be 29 euros a week, lunch and dinners would be 4.20 a pop, and breakfast would be 2 euros a pop. The resulting price would be an across-the-board 2% increase, which is negligible. Keyword being across-the-board here. I still don't know who they expected to fool. Obviously, good STEM students would figure out instantly that for them, the week would now be 82 euros, so a 33% increase. There was an uproar. The rest of the meeting was hearing over and over, it was validated by the school board, as if boarding students had any representation there. The parents were too far and the students too busy. And of course, other parents and students would approve of what was essentially a discount for them, so we were stuck with the new pricing. Okay, but we don't pay for the meals if we don't go, huh? Remember, the school was downtown, and it appears the students needed much less breakfast, lunch, and dinner on site, where there are tons of options and walking distance at a lesser price, up to and including stocking up things in the rooms for breakfast. The kitchen was drowning in stock and bleeding money through the nose. The school being public, buying the food was not a very flexible process they could change week after week. It only lasted a few weeks before they came back to the old pricing structure, albeit a little higher, 65 euros per week, I believe. I still call it a win. Although OP says I still consider it a win, realistically, the people who were trying to raise the prices still won in the end. If anything, you could argue that they just went way overboard with it and then dialed it back to where it was still an increase in profit. I think they just initially pushed what they thought they could get away with, and then just had to dial it back to the most that they could still profit off of, and that people would put up with. TRDP Oren wrote, "Something similar happened at my school in the UK after the Jamie Oliver fiasco. They used to have fairly nice, fairly cheap food, so everyone bought their food there. But then Jamie Oliver happened, and they got a new company to provide allegedly healthy food, which was far more expensive and tasted like crap. So everyone just started buying nicer food for cheaper from local chicken shops or fish and chips." Our next story is Track FMLA Time? You betcha. So, not my malicious compliance, but I was orchestrating it with my wife. So my wife has some health problems and has fully certified and signed off on FMLA. That's the Family Medical Leave Act. For those not in the US, this is the big-time federal government, you do not mess with this, medical leave. Job knew this when she was hired, and they had flexible schedules, so whenever she would have a flare-up, she would just flex it. Couple hours off now, then she'd make the time back up later in the week. Boss knew this, boss was cool with this, everything was great. Cue new boss coming in. Couple months go by, new boss tells my wife repeatedly, "You're doing great, no notes, keep doing what you're doing." Now, new boss is an old school boomer Karen, and my wife has two big brass ones and isn't afraid to tell the Karen to sit down and be quiet and refuses to take her crap. So, total shock to everyone, a few months later without notice or warning, called into HR. HR tries to go on about the FMLA stuff, saying she hasn't been filing her FMLA claims and that she's scamming the company and blah blah blah. So she tells them, "One moment, I know an FMLA expert with 15 years of experience. Let me call him. Hey honey, you got a minute?" "Yeah, did I mention I've worked with FMLA at a national corporate level for years and years? Finally came in handy." "No, dear, FMLA counts as time worked. You've been flexing to make up your time, so it can't."
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Storytime is sponsored by BetterHelp. Nearly everyone at some point in their life will struggle with their mental health, whether that's something stressful at work, in a personal relationship, or something else. I know that I really struggled with anxiety in my early 20s, and therapy was a massive help for me. That's why I'm a massive fan of therapy, and today's sponsor, BetterHelp. If there is anything in your life, big or small, that is negatively affecting you, get it off your chest with BetterHelp. It's an online therapy service that, after finishing a small questionnaire, will match you with a licensed therapist, where you can book appointments that match up with your schedule at any place or any time. And if you feel like you're not bonding with your therapist, you can switch at any point for free. Also, therapy isn't just if you're struggling with mental health. If you're looking for guidance or ways to improve your social skills, life, or relationships, it's a great judgment-free way of doing that. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/StorytimePod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/StorytimePod. Cannot be counted against your FMLA limit. If you need to take FMLA, it's hours worked and does not need to be made up under federal law. They can insist you use PTO alongside it, but they cannot tell you to make it up or they're committing a felony. I could hear the dead silence on the phone. Y finally speaks up, "So, if the problem is that I haven't been properly applying for FMLA, I'll be happy to do so and stop making my time up. Karen boss, I'm gonna have to push these projects back since I won't have as much time to work on them as I thought, since I won't be allowed to make up my time anymore. If you want to authorize some overtime, we can work that out." Turns out Karen boss just didn't like the fact that my wife is work from home and she couldn't micromanage her. Thought she'd get HR to help scare her straight. They were absolutely not prepared for someone to know more about their claims than they did. Karen boss tried a few more times to throw her weight around. Each time, my wife responded with some variation of, "I am not legally allowed to do that, and I have been instructed by corporate to file all time as protected FMLA. Threats of discipline were met with, "Go ahead. I'm the only one you've got who can do X job. I work here because I enjoy it, or at least I used to. Write me up if you feel the need, but please know when you do, that will be the start of my 2-week notice." And she stuck to her guns. Anytime she needs to take FMLA time off, she does so, files everything properly, and Karen boss can just sit and stew because there's not a danged thing she can do about it. It's been about a month now. Boss Karen has finally realized that she's got about as much weight as a feather. HR has gone completely silent, and things have overall gotten much better for the wife since she's got much less stress now. Karen boss keeps communications short, direct, and to the point, just how my wife likes it. Could they fire her for some unrelated reason once the current crunch is done? Sure, but she's already got bites from multiple other companies and we can afford to have her not work for a month or two if worse comes to worst. And we of course have a giant cover your butt folder full of names and dates and everything else where Karen boss tried to retaliate, made for a hostile workplace, etc. Know your rights, people, and do not be afraid to stand up for yourself. There are so many stories like this that come along where people are working so flexibly beyond what most people reasonably would do, and some grumpy new boss comes in and is like, "Well, we can't have this flexibility going on. That enables some inherent special privilege. You gotta knock that crap off." Or is just too dumb, to realize, like in this situation, how it's explicitly helpful. Fallen Sinful wrote, "I got pushed out of a company due to intermittent FMLA. FMLA was approved and then I started getting daily meetings about typing too loud and aggressive. Not an overly cheerful morning greeting, such stupid things, etc. Yeah, they just wanted me gone, so I left. Freak that. Glad your wife knows her rights and sticks up for them." Our next story is When the Secret Backfires. Around 2008, I was a radiology assistant in a mammography unit, meaning I was the person who ushered in patients, showed them where to put their belongings, gives them the gown and instructions. Another part of my job was keeping the radiology station clean and tidy so that work surfaces were clean and sanitary. Around the same time, The Secret was huge and my coworkers were all way into it. For those who don't know, it is a ridiculous pseudo-scientific method pushed by Oprah Winfrey that promised you can get whatever you want simply by visualizing and asking the universe for it. The ugly side of this fairy tale thinking is that if bad things happen to you, it's your fault, because you invited it by putting bad energy out into the universe. I found it wildly inappropriate that healthcare professionals believed that breast cancer victims had caused their own cancers through negative thinking. I fought with a few of the radiology techs about it, but I was completely outnumbered, so I just tried to keep my head down, focus on patients, and do my job, which include tidying up their O magazines, secret books, and other secret-related materials that they would leave strewn all over the counters. Since they all hated me for not being in their secret clique, they decided to gang up on me and go to the managers with complaints about my attitude. I was called out of work into a disciplinary ambush meeting where I explained my side of things. One of the higher-up managers totally agreed with me and actually defended me, but at the conclusion of the meeting, I was told not to touch anyone else's stuff because there were complaints that I was shoving magazines into the corners and threw away someone's copy of The Secret. I really wish I had, but I actually did not do that. It was a complete lie. So, by complaining about me, my idiotic coworkers effectively took away the part of my job which was cleaning up after them. I was no longer allowed to touch their magazines, so they piled up 2 inches deep on every surface, plus empty bottles and yogurt containers, used napkins, cafeteria trays, popcorn detritus, and all sorts of other trash. The workstation looked like a landfill. They would absolutely be seething about it and glaring at me, but I would sit there reading, happily doing absolutely nothing about it since I wasn't allowed to touch their stuff. Honestly, I think that kind of behavior is par for the course for a collective of people who are probably on the niche side of things believing in something like that, and therefore believe that anybody who doesn't believe it is out to get them. Obviously, OP is not organizing or tidying anything up. They're intentionally doing whatever they can to hide, restrict, or destroy the secret materials. It's honestly almost laughable behavior. Squirrel Tail wrote, "Ah, The Secret. Prosperity doctrine / gospel repackaged and sold to the masses who would like to believe that they deserve to have good things solely for having good vibes." And as mentioned, the ugly dark side, it lets them feel smugly superior to people who are struggling. Obviously, those people are bad people who don't deserve help, as it would only encourage their actions. No, better to tell them how they can make their lives better with a stupid book. See, my question for anybody that believes in The Secret, where they believe that because you believe in good vibes and you have positive thoughts, good things will happen, and that bad things happen solely because of your negative outlook, what about all the children of the world who have diseases or are going through some things? I guess they're just gonna try to pass the buck somehow to the parents or people around them? Our next story is, don't mess with a toilet. I was the only male staff working a warehouse at a branch. I would usually be looked for whenever any heavy lifting that couldn't be resolved with machines was required. CEO of the company decided to stop by for the week to evaluate our operations. At this time, I was a Coca-Cola addict. Basically, if I had to sit down to take a poo, it was going to be at least 15 minutes. Truck came with awkward freight that needed to be rigged to a crane extension on our forklift, and I was the only one who could do it. The CEO had decided to stop by that week to evaluate our performance. Well, they were looking for me for about 10 minutes as I was coming out, and she asked me where I'd been. Told her I'd been using the head, and I assumed that was the end of it. Cue the next day, I go in to do my business, only to find the toilet seat missing. I had abs and thighs of steel back then, so I hover for about 5 minutes to expel the bare minimum and head to the branch manager to ask what was going on. Branch manager apologized and said the CEO decided to renovate only the male bathroom, and the port-a-john hadn't arrived on site yet. Well, I had a lunch planned with a big baller client that day, and wouldn't you know it, we went to the Mexican joint we go every year. By the time we made it back to the branch, he had to use the bathroom and, well, he listened to what I had to say, confirmed it with the branch manager, and went on his way. Anyway, he's close with most of the board members, and a week later, the CEO went separate ways with the company. I got my toilet seat back, and I handed in my letter at the same time. I guess it pays to have some connections to people who do have some sway in the company. I guess I just never really considered the toilet to be such a strong driving force. Balzhoich wrote, I'd call this petty revenge. OP only needed to hover while dropping the kids off at the pool and sympathize with the client, who shared the experience. The client did the heavy lifting by talking to the BOD. That being said, that this shows the ridiculous measures that managers and executives will go to eke out productivity at the risk of facing statutory consequences. I don't believe that the CEO is responsible for removing the toilet seat, but the manager who gave the instructions before not having alternate facilities available. However, the CEO is responsible for the environment where the manager believed they could behave maliciously. The CEO paid with their job. Our next story is, dealership pulled bait and switch. It cost them over $50,000. The city I live in has extremely inflated vehicle values compared to the surrounding areas. If you buy the same car from a neighboring state, you can often save $3,000 to $4,000 without really trying. When I buy a new vehicle, which happens every 3 to 4 years, I always look in the surrounding states to compare pricing. This story happened about 5 years ago, and the malicious compliance is still ongoing to this day. I was shopping for a new car, brand new, and found one that matched my specs about 12 hours away in a neighboring state. It was priced about $5,000 below comps. After looking up flights, there was a one-way direct flight that took me to their local airport for around $175, plus the gas to drive back. I was looking at a total of maybe $275 to save $5,000. Absolutely worth it in this situation. I reached out to the dealership, negotiated a bit, and agreed on a price. I let them know that I would be flying in to pick up the car, and offered to pay in full in advance of the flight. They told me that all they needed was a $1,000 deposit and that the car was considered mine. We signed a contract and I paid the deposit, and then I booked the flight for 3 days from then. First sign of things gone awry. When I showed up at the airport, the dealership was supposed to pick me up. This had been arranged in advance. A quick phone call later, and I grabbed an Uber to take me the 20 miles to the dealership with the promise of them covering that cost. No big deal either way. Second sign of things gone awry, when I showed up at the dealership, the salesman I'd been speaking with asked me if I wanted to walk the lot with him to look at a few cars. Yes, cars, plural. Questioning what he meant by that, we walked into the lot to see these cars that he was talking about. Were these some special type of gold inlaid, full self-driving, full self-flying amaze-mobiles? No, they were not. When I point-blank asked to see the car that I was buying, the one with VIN XYZ listed in this signed contract with a deposit on it, I was told it was no longer available. The salesman offered to show me similar cars, which would have been fine if we were able to come to similar terms on pricing. But all of these cars were outrageously priced. Think two times over MSRP instead of $5,000 under MSRP. Important note for later, there was never a mention or any paperwork, signage, etc. of any incentives for giving 5-star reviews. Fast forward 2 to 3 hours, I am now convinced this dealership never had this specific car on the lot, and that this was 100% a bait and switch gone wrong. The dealership was unwilling to sell me a similar vehicle at a similar price to our negotiated one. We were over $5,000 apart, and were unwilling to pay the flight costs for this bait-and-switch scenario. A heated discussion ensued between myself and the GM, where he told me to go ahead and leave a bad review, but that I wasn't getting any free money from him. I took an Uber to a nearby hotel and booked a flight back home for the next day. Total cost? Around $750. Cue malicious compliance. The dealership had an average Google rating of right around 4.5 stars, and around 400 total reviews. Pretty solid for a dealership. That night, while I was sitting in the hotel room, I had some time to burn. I spent a couple of hours creating new email accounts just so that I could leave multiple reviews for this dealership. All said and done, I had left around 21-star reviews over the course of that night, and then sort of stopped caring about the reviews. At this point, my focus shifted to recovering my lost travel expenses. A few days after getting back, I sent the dealership a demand letter for $750, which they promptly ignored. Since we had done the original contract with the deposit in both states, I was allowed to file a small claim suit in my state, which I did. The dealership never showed up to court, and I received a default judgment for $750. I did collect that, by the way. It took a few certified letters, a few phone calls, and about a year, but I did get a check for $750. As you can imagine, I was still not a happy camper. What they had done was wrong on so many levels. All of my friends knew the story of how I was bait and switched, and the fact that I flew out to the dealership on a one-way ticket only made it that much worse. They all had left a bad review or two, but nothing more than a normal mad customer. Cue malicious compliance, long term. I don't know how it started, or how it ended up lasting as long as it has, but at some point I had some time in my hands and left a bad review for this dealership. Just one, not two, not three, one. In doing so, I noticed that all of the reviews I had left right after leaving the dealership were gone. Probably taken down for being fake, or because I'd left so many at the same time and the dealership reported them. I wanted to make sure this dealership wouldn't do this to someone else. So the next day, I checked to make sure that one bad review I had just left was still there. It was, and since I was thinking about it, I went ahead and created another account and left another one-star review. Fast forward 2 to 3 years, it has now become a habit. Every time I have a few minutes to spare, I create a new account and leave a 1-star review for this dealership. Their current rating? 1.9 stars with nearly 3.5 thousand total reviews. I am personally responsible for at least half of those reviews. When you open the dealer's website, one of the large banners that flashes across the screen advertises $50 for a 5-star review. Something about showing the review to your salesman to get a $50 Visa gift card. It has been this way since about a year after this bait and switch occurred, right around the time the 1-star reviews began to accumulate. Assuming I'm responsible for half of their reviews, and the fact that the dealership only has 3.5 thousand total reviews, they've paid $50 per review for at least 1,000 reviews, likely more than that, meaning they have implemented a policy to pay for reviews, have spent $50,000 doing so, and have still seen their average rating drop consistently since telling me to go ahead and leave a bad review. Edited to add, yes, I got my $1,000 deposit back. I paid with a credit card and it was refunded without issue. I couldn't sue for time spent or force the contract to be honored because I sued in small claims court. Time spent not allowable and contract too high of a value for small claims. And yes, the case was 100% winnable if I were to have sued to force the contract to be honored. But legal fees, I wouldn't have needed to hire an attorney, and the additional time spent meant this was just not worth pursuing. And finally, no, I will not provide the name of the dealership. I know that some companies sue people who leave reviews. I'm not willing to risk that, so I will continue to remain anonymous and allow the dealership to do the same. I did report their review practice along with screenshots showing that they're offering payment for 5-star reviews to Google, etc. If anything happens, I'll update this post, though I would expect that may take months or years. Doesn't surprise me that they're trying to do the whole $50 for a 5-star review in today's day and age where everybody's looking at how many stars you have on Google or even like a product listing. That's even just kind of the standard practice. I can't tell you how many times I buy something off of like Amazon and I'll end up getting a very legitimate offer for like a $10 Amazon gift card if I leave a 5-star review. And I shamelessly admit I've tried it a time or two and it's always worked. I don't think they even checked all that hard that you actually left a 5-star review. I think you could even just lie to them and they'd probably still send you the gift card. RDKing647 wrote, "You could probably report them to Google. I think paying for 5-star reviews is against their TOS. Particular Car 8520 wrote, "Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. OP should definitely check the Google review guidelines, as this is an inappropriate practice for business. Also, if there was a contract and it stated you get the car for the deposit, you may be able to sue for that as well. I'm not sure of the statute of limitations, but asking a lawyer could help." Our next story is, you want to review every single candidate? You got it, babe. This is the best time that my warnings went unheeded and made the client regret ever asking. I worked in recruitment for 9 years, and a few years back I had a new client, hiring manager, and she didn't like abiding by the rules set up for the recruitment team. For one thing, we review the applicants, interview the best qualified candidates, and then submit them to the hiring manager for consideration. Well, the hiring manager couldn't understand why we only sent over 3 candidates in a week. Honestly, she's lucky as some positions didn't garner that many applicants. I explained that we submit 3 candidates for every 1 position available. This ensures that the hiring manager's time was considered when scheduling next step interviews. this wasn't just a standard eye set, it was approved by her company's TA bosses, and frankly was standard at another place I used to work at as well. The hiring manager said, "That is absurd. I want to review all of the candidates so I can tell you who to pre-screen, and then you schedule their interview with me based on my availability." I reply, "But ma'am, you have almost 100 applicants that met your minimum qualifications. I don't think you really want to devote that much time to reviewing all of these resumes. And honestly, some of them were not great." They reply, "Are you not listening? Send them all over to me and I'll take care of it." I say, "Yes, ma'am, you got it. I'll send those over right away." I wrote an email to the hiring manager immediately after the call, restating the topics discussed by phone, and asked again if she was certain she wanted all of the candidates sent to her. She confirmed. I complied and forwarded to my boss with an explanation that she will take care of reviewing all applicants, and my numbers were going to be skewed for the month. I did as requested, selecting nearly 100 candidates in the system and moved them to hiring manager review. Now, what this did was send individual emails for each candidate as an update to the hiring manager, and it would ping her email every 3 days that they weren't reviewed. I smirked, knowing what was about to happen, and my rear was going to get chewed out in about a week, but it felt really good because I knew I was right. 2 days later, my boss calls and says he got an irritating phone call from this hiring manager who said she never requested this, to which they responded with the information detailed in my email. She was speechless. He let her know that I would go back into the system and back up the candidate process, so it would be taken out of her to-do list and I would continue to send over candidates that were the best fit for the role as described in our processes. I never received pushback from that hiring manager ever again. Unless this business is your absolute baby, I don't know why anybody as a hiring manager is going to want to be the one to pre-screen 100 applicants. You as the hiring manager made it to being the hiring manager solely for the point of reviewing the best of the best, right? Isn't that how it's supposed to work? Why intentionally try to drown themselves in this stuff? BookNerd381 wrote, "I just finished the process of hiring for a new position. There were over 200 candidates that applied. The recruiter sent me 5, 3 of which were absolutely stunning. I cannot for the life of me thank the recruiter for all the hard work that went into filtering those resumes down to such a small number of great candidates for me to interview." But with that being said, that's all the time we have for today. Now, if you want to hear another absolutely awesome malicious compliance story, check out that video on the left. Or if you missed my latest video, check out that video on the right. That said, I'll see you all next time with some more stories.